Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, a look at the life of Ramsey Clark, one of the most important individuals in the history of the American government. Ramsey Clark, who I hope is listening to this program today, you'll hear his sister on a little later on in the program. She's the author of a very important book about their father, who was an attorney general under Harry Truman, but also a member of the U.S. Supreme Court, and until about 1967. And Ramsey has a unique background. And if he calls in a moment, Ralph Nader will be here to share his insights on Ramsey Clark. And I have a lot of interesting topics to discuss with him. But also, there's a person who has done an important documentary on Ramsey. His name is Joe Stillman. And Joe is important to this whole discussion because of that particular documentary. And a little bit of background on Joe, since I have not had a chance to speak with him in the past. He's a film director and a producer and a writer for over 46 years. He's received one Emmy Award, and several films were in the running for Academy Awards. And for the past 20 years, Joe has put his attention on independent films that focus on issues of the ethics of anti-war, human rights, and correcting injustices. His most recent film that premiered just this week is in Los Angeles' Citizen Clark, A Life of Principle, about the life and long legacy of Ramsey Clark. And he, by the way, he was Attorney General under President Johnson and Assistant Attorney General under John F. Kennedy, who exemplifies the kind of fearlessness and courage to stand up to truth against the enormous powers of government and influence. The film features Ramsey Clark, Ralph Nader, Alice Walker, Noam Chomsky, Frank Serpico, who hopefully will be on today. We spoke to him a little while ago, and he was going to try to make it. And the film's website is alifeofprinciple.com, and it's just been made available on Amazon. Let's go over and say hello to Joseph. Nice to have you with us today, Joseph.
Well, thank you so much, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let's take people on a little background to address some of the issues that most people today, certainly most young people, would never have heard of Ramsey Clark. In fact, they don't remember some of the most important famous people in American history. If you were to go on the streets today and ask the average millennial, tell us what you know of let's say, John F. Kennedy. They may have heard the name, but I'll bet they couldn't tell you anything. Now ask them to speak about one of the most important lawyers, a fearless fighter for human rights everywhere, and that's Ramsey Clark, and I'll bet none of them know who he is. So why did you decide that this was an important topic when there's such a relatively small audience of younger people who would be interested in him?
Well, that's a good question, Gary. I've shown this film to various colleges around the United States, and the first question I always ask is, how many people in this room know who Ramsey Clark is? Raise your hand, and no one raises their hand, as you said, but the professors do, or their teachers. And so I say to them, you're going to change the world. You're the biggest, the brightest group of young people who have access to information in their cell phones at the tip of their fingers, and you're supposed to be critical thinkers. You're supposed to ask the hard questions if you want to get to the truth. So the film that you're about to see is a film about the ultimate critical thinker, a person who was essentially demonized and marginalized because he chose to tell the truth about what was really happening around the world through our government. And when they see the film and they and we have a Q&A, their questions are really interesting because I hope that it inspires them certainly to be to not accept the status quo and to probe as Ramsey did and hold people really responsible. And that's, really the the purpose of Citizen Clark Alive for Principle is to embolden individuals to become active, engaged citizens in this experiment that we call a democracy.
Good. I'm going to come back to you in a few moments because Ralph Nader is now on the line, and he has a limited time he can be with us, and I'm going to go over to Ralph and back to you.
Sure.
And Ralph Nader is, without a second, one of the most influential Americans during the past several decades, at least 50 decades. He's directly responsible for more legislation on providing protection to American consumers than any other citizen in American history, and that means even legislators or presidents. And he also challenged the onslaught of the corporate short-term profits of the Friedmanite free market and the unregulated capitalism and landmark acts for freedom of information, clean water, clean air, whistleblower protection, wholesome food, and almost 200 others. He's a graduate of Princeton and Harvard universities, and Ralph has been a presidential candidate for 5 elections and building his platform on consumer rights and humanitarian and civil efforts and environmental sanity and democratic government. And Ralph's most recent book, just released this month, is To the Ramparts, How Bush and Obama Paved the Way for the Trump Presidency and Why It Isn't Too Late to Reverse Course, that outlines the key flaws in the former White House administrations and both parties have brought us to the edge we find ourselves of today as a nation. His website is Nader, that's NADER.org, and CSRL.org. Nice to have you with us today, Ralph.
Good to be with you, Gary.
Ralph, one of the areas I'm very interested in is the controversial decisions that Ramsey Clark has made, and especially his lifelong activism against U.S. intervention in other nations. Even in 1988, Ramsey visited Syria when conflicts were occurring, and he started his opposition to U.S. intervention early, visiting North Vietnam as a protest against the bombing of Hanoi. So please go down some of these areas. Some of these people may say, especially on the left, why would he ever, you know, protect that person or go to bat for them? And others, it's more understanding. For example, if we talked about people that, like Philip Berrigan or Leonard Pelletier, or survivors of the relatives of the Branch Davidians after the Waco, Texas debacle, where Janet Reno was Attorney General. And then you ask, what about Milosevic, the head of Yugoslavia, and because he believed that he was right and attended his funeral? And what about his views on NATO since 1999, after NATO bombed Yugoslavia during Clinton's presidency, and he called for the dissolution of NATO? So take us through what you see are the most interesting parts of Clark's unique history.
Well, as this wonderful documentary, Citizen Clark, points out, Ramsey Clark, you know, started out in the public view as Attorney General under Lyndon Johnson. And he prosecuted some people in Chicago who were anti-war. And I don't think he believed it, but I think LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, wanted it done. But that was a really huge marker in his life. After he left the Justice Department, I think he decided he was never again going to do anything he didn't believe in. And he wasn't going to let anybody force him to do anything that he didn't believe in, whether it's as a lawyer or client or any other institution that he was involved in. So to understand Ramsey Clark, really, is to understand two major directions in his life. One is waging peace, and that's one reason he was against NATO. He thinks that we spend a lot of money waging war, and we almost spend no money waging peace. And as a result, we get involved in these quagmire wars, empire, drones, special forces, blowing up innocent people, wedding parties in Afghanistan, villages in Iraq, and there are endless wars where our soldiers, when they come back, if anybody chose to interview them, would tell us that these are useless, brutal wars that are just creating more and more enemies. We ought to listen to the soldiers on the ground, not the generals in the Pentagon who have to toe the line to the civilian leadership in the White House and Secretary of Defense. So that was one, waging peace. He'd go anywhere, He joined demonstrations. And a lot of these areas were really hot areas. I mean, he put himself in jeopardy. The second direction of Ramsey Clark is that everybody deserves a competent defense if they are prosecuted. It doesn't matter who they are. They can be the worst dictators and brutal people in the world. But if you believe in the rule of law and equal justice, you have to provide them with defense attorneys. And that tests the validity of the charges against them. And if they are prosecuted, the prosecution is believable. They can't say it's rigged because these defendants had adequate counsel and presented an arm's-length defense. So that's why he went to Iraq and represented for a time Saddam Hussein, who was captured. That's why he went to Yugoslavia, Milosevic. And people don't understand that. They say, how can you represent these terrible people? It's interesting, Gary, people don't ask these big corporate law firms, how can they represent an industry whose products kill 400,000 or more Americans a year, like the tobacco industry? They don't say, how can you represent all these drug companies that are producing drugs that are that have terrible side effects or over-promoting opiate drugs? They don't ask that. They assume that these corporate bosses are entitled to the best lawyers they can pay for. But Ramsey translated that into all defendants deserve a counsel and deserve to be represented in a court of law. And that's the only way you can preserve the integrity of the rule of law, and the only way you can have public support for the way the prosecutions are either lost or victorious. And so he's made a lot of adversaries as a result, because even at law schools, they don't like to have him speak over the years, because they don't understand the pure nature of his willingness to put himself on the line, often for no money at all, or if he is paid, it's very modest, anywhere in the world, to make that point, that laws have to be observed, procedures have to be observed, and the Constitution has to be obeyed, which is why he always opposed all these unconstitutional wars that we've gotten into since World War II. Because he thought they were illegal. Of course, he's right. Congress has not declared war since early 1942, when Franklin Roosevelt declared war on one or two Eastern European countries after declaring war against Japan and Germany.
Ralph, Ramsey is a symbol of the new frontier liberal. Now, we've forgotten, and the Democratic Party has completely betrayed the moral ethics and care for citizens that this movement launched in the 1960s. Please speak on how Ramsey and yourself were symbols of the new frontier and its relevance today.
Well, we believed law equates with justice, and law is not to be used as an instrument of oppression the way it is in the inner city, with landlords violating legal codes and blocking any effort to provide safe habitation, just to take one example, or the payday loan rackets. The law has turned into more and more lawlessness to serve the rich and powerful. And I've written an article for Lapham's Quarterly on the land of the lawless and just how systemic and entrenched violation of health, safety laws, tax laws, you name it, by corporations and the powerful are in this country. I mean, it's just a lie that, you know, the laws are violated mostly by poor people on the streets. So, you know, we've always equated lawyers with the law and the law with justice. If you're wrongfully injured, you should have rights to go into court, have a trial by jury as guaranteed by the Seventh Amendment to the Constitution, and put forward your case. So that's one. The second, I think, was coming out of the 60s, is equal protection of the laws. And Ramsey's very, very strong on that. He's always been a defender of the oppressed, of minorities, He's been extremely explicit on this. He's for prison reform. He always has been before it became more popular. What is important about understanding Ramsey is he wants more people to be able to use the law. Very few people can use the law to defend themselves. There are all kinds of procedural and other obstacles, cost, money, you know, lawyers. And so he didn't think that the law should present an economic barrier, which is why he likes the contingent fee of tort lawyers, where they only get paid if they win. But for a lot of other situations, especially in economic ripoffs, you really can't afford a lawyer in this country. You can't begin to afford a lawyer, and legal aid is extremely limited. There are only 4,000 legal aid lawyers for the entire United States, and the legal corporation that was set up by Congress back in the early 70s. So these are all, you know, these are subjects, Gary, that don't get on NPR and PBS, and never mind the commercial media. They don't get congressional hearings anymore. So we're really seeing the supremacy of raw power pounding the law into dust for the vast majority of the people, but preserving the law for the rich and powerful. And you can see that with the tax code. And you can see that with the corporate subsidies, corporate welfare, or crony capitalism. You can see that with the huge inflated defense contracts. You know, back in the 60s, the Democrats would supervise the Pentagon budget more. Senator Proxmire from Wisconsin, one of the most outstanding senators having hearings on the Pentagon. But just look what happened a few months ago. The 60% of the Democrats in the Congress voted for a Pentagon budget that was larger than what Trump wanted from Congress. $64 billion larger. 60% of the Democrats joined the Republicans. This is a sick, decadent party. I'm putting out a column as we speak, 15 ways the Democrats can lose the November 2018 elections. 15 ways. They can't defend the country against the rapacious, brutish, Wall Street toady Republican Party that never saw a Pentagon budget it didn't like or a war it didn't like. Now, you should be landsliding a Republican Party like that. And instead, the Republican Party at the state, legislative, gubernatorial, national level controls the government. It's landslided the Democrats. So I'm sure that Ramsey looks back and says, what's this party called the Democratic Party? What's it all about? It's been corporatized. It's sold its soul. You know, it would be nice to have Bernie Sanders change it or some of the young insurgents that are coming up. But the apparatchik of the Democratic National Committee is still dialing for commercial dollars and turning its back, even on the unions, without which they wouldn't even be in contention.
But they've also betrayed the unions. The Clintons have lied about the unions benefiting from their policies going back to NAFTA and GATT and CAFTA. And why is it, and I've always been curious about this, and you would be better able to explain this, why is it that the core of a lot of the Clintons, which were the minority part groups, Latinos, African Americans, and the unions voted in mass for the Clintons and Obama, and then if you look at the actual policies, did they benefit from them being in power? The answer was no. Why didn't that connection come about?
Because the Democrats have two ways to keep those minorities voting for them. One is rhetoric. You know, Clinton is like a snake root salesman. You just put him in a black church, and he's, you know, with the ribbon. He knows how to pull the symbols of the civil rights movement, and et cetera. So, and Hillary's the same way. They've honed their ability to identify rhetorically with blacks and Hispanic Americans and women and children. Their record has not exactly been very sterling. But the other way they get away with it is they show with some validity that the Republican Party is worse. So basically they're saying to these people, you got two choices, there's no third, fourth parties, you got two choices, and we're the least of the worst. They don't say it that way, but that's what they convey as they accuse the Republicans of wanting to destroy Social Security, roll back Medicare, et cetera, et cetera. And that's the rhythm of two-party duopoly, and that's why, because we're told, vote for the least of the worst, both parties get worse every 4 years.
Ramsey opposed the war on terrorism, and you as well, from what I've heard you say, and he referred to it accurately as the war against Islam. And what was he observing that the average American, the average journalist, the average politician seemed blind to or outright ignoring?
Well, because he knew history. That's what this film, Citizen Clark, is designed to get to younger people, because I always talk to younger people, Gary, you know, about history. I say, you don't think history is important? Well, let me ask you a personal question. What do you think you'd be like if you didn't know anything about your life except the last 6 months? That starts them thinking. And what Ramsey knew, anybody who reads history, is that Western nations, led by the British, French, and after World War I, the U.S., have been messing around in the backyards of these countries in the Middle East and Africa. And messing around meaning propping up dictators, installing dictators, overthrowing the popularly elected leader of Iran in 1953, and at the same time the same thing in Guatemala. And many others. I mean, it's been probably 80 different types. Talk about election tampering. We don't mess around with election tampering. We overthrow them. And so it's amazing it took this long for anyone from that area to strike back. And 9/11 was the strike back. And, of course, the reaction was against millions of innocent people in Afghanistan, Iraq, and part of Pakistan, and then spilling over into Libya and Yemen and so on. And so what Ramsey knows, that any historian would know, is if we're messing around with their backyard and, you know, bribing and looting their resources and so on, why should we be surprised that there was an attack on 9/11, number one? Apart from its origination. But why should we be surprised that they hate us, that more and more fighters are joining these various groups? And why should we be surprised when they think we're the terrorists, we're the state terrorists? I mean, who's killed more innocent people since 9/11? You think the United States or all those groups, Al-Qaeda and ISIS? It isn't even close. I mean, over a million Iraqis have died because of our criminal invasion of Iraq in 2003. 5 million completely displaced refugees out of a country of 27 million. And all kinds of just daily preventable disease, contaminated water, ruptured healthcare systems, unemployment, poverty. And that's just Iraq. So they think we're state terrorists. And Ramsey, I think, would agree.
Ramsey and both of you, as I mentioned, are really the living representation of the new frontier liberal. And it was John F. Kennedy who coined that. And let's just take a moment and understand if the people looked at third parties today, which we're not, but we should, and they looked at what were the social reforms that Kennedy and the new frontier liberals believed in, Ramsey and yourself included, they believed in expanding Social Security, increasing the minimum wage, supporting the family farms and food stamps and school milk programs at that time, and especially assistance to children and underprivileged families.
And full These employment. Are all, that was a Congress. Congress enacted the Humphrey Hawkins Act, which put the United States government on a commitment to full employment. They don't even talk about that now.
But none of the candidates in actual office, whether it's the president, Clinton's, the co-president's, Clinton, because according to all that I've read from people who worked in the White House, she really was the dominant policymaker. He was the charismatic face that sold it to the public. But right up to today, we should have had. You've been advocating universal health care, but we have no universal health care. Well, where are the Democrats, where are the liberals when it comes to giving us universal health care, which if you took the profit out of our medical system could easily be afforded? Your thoughts?
Well, it's very simple. People have abandoned the power that they have given under our Constitution to 535 men and women in Congress, senators and representatives. It's their power that the members of Congress are using, the people's power, against the people on behalf of a handful of giant corporations and trade associations. So the answer is we have to organize in every congressional district a reasonable Congress watchdog effort, and less than 1% of the adults can make this happen, and move Congress in the direction of what a majority of the American people, sometimes liberals and conservatives, want, like a living wage and full Medicare for all, cracking down on corporate crime and a new kind of tax system, and end to corporate welfare, and debloat the military budget and put all those tens of billions of dollars back repairing America, its public works, its public transit, bridges, clinics, libraries, schools, you name it, it's crumbling. And so it's not really that hard when you put the need on the table. I mean, really, when you think people are into all kinds of hobbies where they spend 300 to 500 hours a year and $500 a year, whether they're collecting stamps or coins or cars or bird watching, fine. But imagine if just 1% of the American people, that's 2.5 million people, far more than is needed to turn Congress around, decided they were going to have a Congress watchdog hobby and connect with each other, open up a couple offices with full-time people in every congressional district. All those things you mentioned, Gary, would be turned around within 2 years. It's just there's nothing out there except, you know, the auto dealers are organized, the insurance agents are organized, but the people, the consumers, the workers, they're not organized. So we shouldn't overcomplicate this. We have the most powerful branch of government, turns out to be the smallest and the most personal, 535 members of Congress. You control Congress, you turn around the executive branch, and you get a better brand of judges instead of the corporate judges, the worst of which may be on their way to the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh, who's against anything human and defends everything artificial, like corporations. He's the corporate judge. So you can predict him to the nth degree. He's going to rule against workers, consumers, communities, victims of pollution, and put more and more power in the White House to continue the role of empire and a lawless presidency. I've got all this written in a very small book, which I think you know about, Breaking Through Power. It's easier than we think. It's only 144-page paperback by City Lights, and I've just come out with another book that shows many of the same things, but it's not as handy. It's called, as you mentioned, To the Ramparts, and it's published today, August 28th.
One final question. I know you have to go, but I think this is very important. After Ramsey was drafted and was responsible for supervising the executive signing of the Voters' Rights Act in 1965 and the Civil Rights Act in 1968 under President Johnson, he was also responsible for assuring a court order was in place so Martin Luther King's marches in Selma and Montgomery were protected. He led efforts after 9/11 and our invasions in the Middle East to impeach Bush and remove Cheney and Rumsfeld and Ashcroft. But it was his 2009 statement where he accused Israel of genocide of Palestinians in Gaza that got so many people, including on the left, against him. Now, fast forward today. The worst genocide in the world today is not in the Congo. It's in the most poor little nation in the Middle East, Yemen. 10 million children are at risk, 22 million of starvation and privations, And because of Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and the United States, and Great Britain, and France, they're all participatory at different levels. And yet you don't hear a word from any member of Congress today about what's going on to the Palestinian people. In fact, you can't find anything in the major papers or on CNN or the major networks about the Palestinians and what's being done to them, because the moment you open your mouth, you're labeled as an anti-Semite, and then you're excluded from being interviewed for anything. Your thoughts?
Well, it is the major censorship over the years. I've always thought that many of the rabid pro-Israel supporters of exploiting and occupying and injuring the Palestinian people, stealing their water, stealing the land, smashing through doors, blowing up Gaza, innocent civilians and children, they are the anti-Semites against the Arab people. We have to recognize that the Jews don't own the word anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is against Semitic people, and the Arabs are the original Semitic people, along with the original Jews. And I think the way to dilute that accusation, which, as you say, is a very powerful one against anyone in Congress who dares challenge AIPAC and the Israeli lobby, I think is important to describe anti-Semitism against Arabs, which is very widespread in this country and abroad. By the way, I arranged for a very civil debate between two Jewish Americans, two Arab Americans, which you can see on debatingtaboos.org, the website, debatingtaboos.org. And the debate was on today, is there more anti-Semitism against Arab Americans than there is against Jewish Americans? And I'll tell you, the Jewish Americans recognize that there is anti-Semitism in this country against Arabs, Muslim Arabs, you name it. Especially when something gets hot over there in the Middle East. So I think we need people. And Ramsey stood up. You'll see in the film. The film Citizen Clark, really it's kudos to your guest, Mr. Tillman. The film Citizen Clark is a story of raw moral courage. I mean, Ramsey had physical courage. I mean, he went to places, very troubled, eruptive places in the world. He did have physical courage. But his moral courage up against massive condemnation by the culprits, by the establishment, you know, by people like Donald Rumsfeld or Paul Wolfowitz, you know, the warmongers who got us into Iraq, that Dick Cheney, is dramatic. People should see this film of all ages, and I'm glad it's being shown around colleges.
Well, I thank you for your being in the film, and my goal is to get you and about 50 other leading intellects and humanists and populists together and to present ideas on a conference call, like a round table of wise people. So that the younger millennials coming up and running for office, encouraging them to run for office, at least will have platforms that are truly progressive and humanistic and spiritual in value, and as well as the practical politics that you've learned so much from. And with the Michael Moores and the others, you know, Bill Maher's thinking that once you're a certain age, you should, you know, step aside, and yet they haven't stepped aside. And I've yet to see anything constructive coming that makes it a better world because of them, except for their own personal aggrandizement. But I'd like to see young people know that there's a place where they can go, a forum that they can attend on a regular basis where there's really, really good minds there to guide them in the future and lay down some of the platforms these younger people can run on, at least be fully aware of the past and its significance in the future and its purpose.
And also it will help them because there's a legacy to be transferred to them if they would only read about it, if they would only read some books, look at films like Citizen Clark, for heaven's sake. That's the problem with the millennials. They think looking at screens is reading. And you ask them, what's the last book you read? What? You know, they're text messaging, reading snippets here and there. It's just awful. They've got to straighten up, and older generation has got to put the arm around the shoulder of young people and teach them civic responsibility is all about. It's their world they're going to inherit. If they don't take charge, it's going to be an awful world.
Well, you were part of the best that we could be, and my hope is that you'll be a part of the best the future can be, because your mind is as sharp as ever, and a long life to you. And my hope is for Ramsey Clark to be around, continue his guidance. Thank you very much, Ralph, for being with
us today. Thank you very much, Gary. And stay tuned, people, to the rest of the show, because there's a lot more to know about Citizen Clark, Ramsey Clark.
All right. That was Ralph Nader. Now let's go back to Joseph Stillman, who is standing by. Again, Joseph is an award-winning documentarian, and he also won an Emmy Award. And he just finished this film that's very important that we're suggesting people watch. And we're talking about Ramsey Clark. So let's pick it up where Ralph left off, and let's take it to what you have understood and what you've been able to do on the subject of Ramsey Clark.
Well, you know, I'd like to sort of follow up on the last thing you were talking about young people. The Citizen Clark takes place over a 90-year time period from 1927 to the present in 35 segments, and really it sort of starts in World War II and kind of ends up in Parkland. And those Parkland students are really incredible. I think, you know, when the shooting happened in February of this year, I called up Ramsey and I said, "Ramsey, what do you think of this, of these kids?" He says, "I think they're incredible. I think they are the future of this country." And they get it. They understand that no one is representing them. They've sold out. And the only way that they're going to be able to enact change is to confront their leaders. And if their answers are not sufficient to protecting them and this country, then they're going to do everything they can to replace them, to work against them, to replace them. And I think, you know, Ramsey was very hopeful about this new generation of kids. They are the future of this country if they can be mobilized. And I grew up in the 60s, and I remember the, you know, Vietnam War and the way that it coalesced us, because our cousins and our friends were in the war, and it divided the country, and it really gave us the momentum to be able to seek change. And I think, you know, I don't know that we did such a great job after that point, but I think that what we did have in common was what Ramsey has always advocated. I mean, if there's anything, this film has many themes, a fearless individual, et cetera, but if there's one theme that Ramsey has fought against all his life, is the influence of special interest and big business. And we see that played out time after time after time again, and Ramsey was always there to confront it head on. And, you know, so I think, you know, you talk about fearless people. I mean, you've got Ramsey, you've got Ralph Nader, you've got Frank Serpico. I mean, you couldn't, who incidentally is not only the executive producer of this film, but he's also Ramsey's best friend. There is a great example of a fearless individual who took on corruption in the New York City Police Department single-handedly. But, you know, people like that are really what we need to make this country great again. You know, I hate to use that phrase, but it's important that we understand, as Ralph said, you know, the past, history, and I think that was one of the things that made Ramsey the special person that he was. He was a student of history. You know, people would ask me, why did he defend Saddam? And you know, how could he possibly do that? And I would say, well, you have to understand, as Ramsey would tell me, that there was a history there of several thousand years where you had warring factions. And Saddam was just, you know, the leader at that particular time that was keeping these three groups from annihilating each other. But you had to have certain people do that in various points in history. And look what we did to that country, how we totally destroyed it.
Joseph, you're absolutely right.
It's a shame.
I want to go to our final panelist. We are listening to Joseph Stillman, the producer and director of the film. And that's Mimi Clark Gronlund, who is the sister of former Attorney General Ramsey Clark. She's also the author of a biography of their father, Supreme Court Justice Tom C. Clark, A Life of Service. He was Attorney General under Harry Truman and later Supreme Court Justice. So we're going to thank you very much, and we're going to take a brief break and come right back with our final panelists of the day. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and this is a special presentation to honor the life work of one of the most fearless crusaders for justice and human rights in American history, Ramsey Clark. On the line now with us is Mimi Clark Gronlund, his sister, and Mimi is the author of a biography of their father, Supreme Court Justice Tom C. Clark, and the work was called A Life of Service. He was also Attorney General under Harry Truman, and then later a Supreme Court Justice until 1967. Nice to have you with us today, Mimi.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be with you.
What I really like and have always liked about your brother is that he didn't take the easy, convenient, or politically correct way out of anything. He would take on issues, take on clients that no one else wanted to touch. And your brother took on some of the most controversial figures to represent during his career, particularly with respect to the Middle East and other U.S. interventions in foreign countries. For example, he started the coalition to stop U.S. intervention in the Middle East in 1991. He accused President Bush and Dan Quayle and James Baker and Dick Cheney and Colin Powell and General Schwarzkopf with crimes against peace and humanity with the first Gulf War and called sanctions against Iraq an act of genocide. And later in 2004, he defended Saddam Hussein on the Iraqi Special Tribunal. He also represented PLO leaders on occasion. And he was one of the first to speak out against the war on terror, calling it a war against Islam. So speak about your brother's views of U.S. interventions in the Middle East and on foreign policies, particularly in our undying support of Israel. And how might our relationship with the Middle East countries be different today if our foreign policy had followed your brother's views during the past 30 years? The forum is yours.
Well, Ramsey is fearless, and if he believes that a cause is just, he will take it on whether or not it is popular, and he has certainly done that in many cases. Of course, at home, as Attorney General and Assistant Attorney General, he was very involved in civil and human rights. He was involved in the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act. So he has a long history of dedication to civil rights and human rights and justice in general. And he has, of course, been controversial because of the fact that he has taken on some unpopular people, such as Saddam Hussein. But Ramsey feels and is dedicated to fair representation to anyone who is being accused of crime. He believes in a fair trial. There have certainly been cases when that has not been the case. And I think that in the Middle East, where there has been such controversy and really demonization of some people, because of his belief in justice, he took on cases that most people would not have done, most lawyers. So I think Ramsey is a role model for what a public servant should be like. He is a man of integrity. He is fearless. And you're not going to get him to change his mind if he believes that an injustice has been done or if someone is not being guaranteed his legal rights. Of course, I can't really speak to what would have happened had his policies been followed rather than what happened, but it seems very clear, of course, that the Iraq war was a pretty tragic mistake. It has led to really the total disruption of the Middle East, tremendous amount of unhappiness, bloodshed, and it's still going on. I think really Ramsey in some ways has been appreciated and recognized more internationally than he has at home. He received the Gandhi Peace Prize in 1992. In 2008, he received the UN Human Rights Award. And he is probably tried harder than anyone to bring peace to the Middle East, often at great risk to himself, going to Damascus, hoping to find some sort of peaceful settlement there, going to Iraq during that time that he was on Saddam Hussein's defense team. And as I say, he is fearless and he is a man of integrity. You're not going to see him be influenced by what is popular or by money or any other thing when he thinks that a just cause is involved.
I would certainly support that. I was always perplexed by an issue, and maybe he spoke with you about this, and if he did, even though your brother was invited, he wasn't able to attend this program today. But did he ever talk about the fact that Saddam Hussein did use gas on the Kurds, but that came from Great Britain and the United States? I did an article at the time showing that it went through the CDC and also the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the chemical formulas went from our government to him, and this was when he was our dictator, not a benevolent dictator. He was not a nice person. But there's a big difference between not being a nice person and being repressive to some of the Shia in your own country versus having weapons of mass destruction and we destroying over a million of his people and displacing 10 million because Judith Miller and Dick Cheney and others were wrong. And so here we are. We're supplying with weapons and intelligence to fight the Iranians. And then later, when everything went against him, then suddenly we arrest him, and he's tried in no small measure for gassing people. Well, why didn't we go after him for gassing people originally when he was our ally and we were supplying the gas? That always was a point of contention that I'd like some insight, if you have any, to share on that.
Well, truthfully, Ramsey and I never discussed that issue, and just because Ramsey was on Saddam Hussein's defense team does not mean that he felt that Saddam Hussein was a good guy or that he did not do things that were certainly we would consider terrible. But the point is that Saddam Hussein deserved a fair trial. And whatever a person does, no matter how awful it is, they deserve to have their case presented in a legal court and with a lawyer who is competent. If you don't have, if you only give fair trials to people that everyone likes or that have not really done anything seriously wrong, what kind of justice system is that? I would say it's not much of one.
I fully agree. Here's another issue, and I don't know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but he was anathema to many in the corporate liberal Democratic Party, the Clinton Party. And I had read where he was very concerned about the 500,000 Iraqi children who died because of the sanctions and initiated by Bush but carried forward by the Clintons, Hillary and Bill Clinton. And I remember when Madeleine Albright, the Secretary of State and also the U.N. ambassador to the U.N., said when Leslie Stahl interviewed her on 60 Minutes, well, is it acceptable that 500,000 children have died? She said, yes, it's acceptable. And I know that that would really have concerned him, that he was challenging people within his own party and challenging people who are supposed to have been above committing regime change and supporting the policies they did around the world. Your thoughts on his views on the Clintons and others who were considered for freedom and democracy, but in actuality were not?
Well, Ramsey certainly did not agree with everything that President Clinton and his administration did. He would never say that it was acceptable for millions of children to be annihilated. But truthfully, Ramsey did not have influence in that administration. And I know he objected, and I think he came out with strong statements. But his influence was, at best, minimal. So he is not going to, just because Bill Clinton was a Democrat, and he is not going to support him if he thinks he's doing something that's wrong. So those policies he was definitely opposed to, but unfortunately, or not everyone perhaps thinks it's unfortunate, but he had no influence to change that.
What were his views about the Middle East activities under Obama, with the invasion of Libya and Syria, and now the Trump administration?
Well, Ramsey believes in peace, and he doesn't believe that war accomplishes anything lasting. So he would not be in favor of invasions. He is definitely someone who would go to negotiation rather than to war. And he's certainly very consistent with that. And he would, I'm sure, feel that way about our involvement in the overthrow of Libya, of Gaddafi. But again, as I say, while he continued to work hard for peace, as you see in the world today, he has had limited success in that field.
He and everyone else that tried.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a tough one.
he can stand beside Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, Maimonides, and a lot of other people who stood out, stood up, and were right historically. Well, I want to thank you for being on and for this opportunity to speak with you. And please pass on our best to your brother, and that he holds a special place in the hearts of all of us who were activists in the 1960s and up to this present time, because he was always the one person that we could look to who went against the consensus, went against the Washington establishment, which is now called the swamp. He went against them, and we respect that in him.
Well, thank you for honoring him. He is a great man, and he deserves to be acknowledged as such, and I appreciate very much your efforts to do that.
Thank you very much. Mimi Clark Gronlund, and the sister of and an author, very respected author in her own right, and her father was a Supreme Court justice and an attorney general. So more than anything, my hope is this. For all of you listening right now, please share this program with millennials. Ask them to go up and look up Ramsey Clark and look at all that he did, the battles he took on, frequently alone, where the left left him alone, wanted nothing to do with him, and that he stood firm. They were wrong, he was right, time and again. Boy, did the younger generation need to know this kind of man is alive today and was there when their fathers were activists. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.
Hey, what's up now?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far